Welcome to Character Explorations, a podcast production of the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque. I'm Annalee Ward, the director of the Wendt Center, and our guest today is Rafiq Sinno, Associate Professor of Business at the University of Dubuque. He is the author of the article, Navigating a Pokemon Go World. This article is available online at dbq.edu/Wendt/publications. And that's dbq.edu/WENDT/publications. Welcome, Rafiq. You wrote this article back in 2016 for the journal issue Character and Screen Life, a time when Pokemon Go app was a worldwide phenomenon. But by mid-2022, according to Screen Rant, the daily player base was much smaller, approximately 8 million. A loss of approximately 80% of its fan base. But it doesn't mean the company has gone away, nor does it mean the issues that you dealt with are irrelevant. In fact, the themes of play and the issues of character it raised remain relevant, as we see these emerge in so many apps today. So let's begin with a brief description of what Pokemon Go is and why you wanted to even write about it back then.
Well, that's great. So maybe perhaps let's start with some context since that time. So as of 2022, the game has been downloaded over a billion times. So it's very, very relevant. And if you look at the respective app stores for the game, it ranks in the very top. It's the number two top grossing adventure game in the Google Play Store. And in the Apple Store, it's the number four strategy game on the Apple App Store. So amongst all apps, amongst the millions and billions of users out there, it ranks fairly high. What's interesting too is kind of to discuss the key statistics we mentioned earlier, and these are more so from the notes that I've gathered, is that in 2016, where it was the rave was having Pokemon Go on your phone, we had 232 million active players. That's quite staggering.
It is.
It's very, very staggering. And then we go to 2021, even after the pandemic and so forth, we have now a smaller group, like you said, kind of coinciding with what you've presented, 71 million active players. Yet, I want to mention that Niantic, the company who produced Pokemon Go, its valuation back in 2016 was 150 million. Now, today, it's valued at over $9 billion.
That's billion.
Billion.
Dollars.
With a B.
With so many less users.
Yes. Yes. So there is an active group of core users who are buying digital goods through Pokemon Go. And Pokemon Go platform, of course, makes its money through advertising. It also sells digital hardware like Bluetooth receivers and devices. And it also organizes events as well. But a lot of the bread and butter is coming from these players who are spending their dollars in this game. So that's quite phenomenal. So that shows me a couple of different aspects. One, it's still a very active part of people's lives. People still use it very much. And then if we look at it being number two, as we said before, and number four in those categories, respectively, as we talked about the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store, well, it also shows that it's a fairly dominant type of force within the gaming industry itself. So I was certainly part of that group. I was certainly a player.
Well, why did you want to play it? Why did you want to write about it?
Well, it came at a time where I saw my stepdaughters playing it. So I would see Allison, my stepdaughter, and Ashley, my stepdaughter, who both were playing it and just having so much fun with it. And so their love for the game actually stemmed from the anime Pokemon. And so it was an anime now turned into an augmented reality game in which you could do a treasure hunt. That's what Pokemon Go is all about. You could do that treasure hunt aspect of it. So essentially, you go out into your neighborhood, you take out your phone, and as you launch the app, you will be able to pan around your surroundings, and then you will be able to glimpse a Pokemon. It's a creature, like it can look like a bunny if you want, or look like a dragon or so forth. And then you have the ability to then swipe up on the app and capture it via a Pokeball. Okay. And you see this happening live right in front of you. So it can be here, for example, at the University of Dubuque, we could be in front of the MTAC building, or we can be in front of the Commons and we can see a Pokemon, and all of a sudden we can have the ability to capture the Pokemon right then and there. So all of this works on geotag locations. So certain Pokemon will appear given the location you're at, and certain Pokemon are harder to get in some locations, which leads to the adventure part of it as well. So I was intrigued and captivated by this. My daughters, they would go and capture all these Pokemon, come back and show me, and they're like, "Hey, Rafiq, you got to get into this. You got to check this out." I was like, "Oh, there's nothing much to this, but you know what? Maybe it's an opportunity to connect, you know, in a different way, and in a way that they enjoy." So I said, you know what, I'll go ahead and create an account. And I did. And soon enough, I was capturing Pokemon. And then I was comparing my Pokedex, which is basically your collection of Pokemon, with my daughter's. And we do kind of comparisons and say, oh, I caught a really rare one here, or, you know, and so forth. And so that's what kind of got me into it, or propelled me into it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I'm picturing you running around, capturing these. And as you played this, mm-hmm. what were some of the positive effects that you saw come out of the game?
Well, I certainly got my steps in. That was not an issue at any point in time. You would find me spending some time at the Buick Arboretum. You would find me all over town, actually, downtown, around the Riverwalk area. I would capture Pokemon here at UD in my office. Admittedly, sorry to admit that. But yes, I would capture some Pokemon all over campus here. It was great place for capturing Pokemon. I would definitely have benefit from that. Also, it was somewhat of an escape. You know, if you think about it, it was a little bit of a diversion. So to get you to shift your mind and attention or focus to something else momentarily, and then you get back to it. And I noticed that, you know, when I was playing with my daughters, there would be a connection. There would be a common language, a common type of an approach that we use to connect with each other. So all of those were very, very positive benefits.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So you had personal experience with some of the positive effects. Have you heard or read about anything else positively coming out of this game?
Yeah, from my research, what I've cited within the article itself is a study by Duke University and University of Wisconsin-Madison. And what they did is they investigated how Pokemon Go had an impact, a potential impact on the emotional and social lives of around 399 participants. And these were around the age of 18 to 75. And so the survey showed that basically if they played Pokemon Go, they had positive outcomes. So those had basically including how they felt about themselves. They felt more positive. They had more of a sense of nostalgia. Friendship formation, they have friendship intensification, their ability to like relate with each other very well. And then of course, walking. And that all kind of enhanced their well-being. So there is actual studies that back that this particular game is healthy. is conducive to developing friendships, is conducive to making connections. You know, this was all positive. I didn't realize that until after the fact. I just kind of realized that more from my personal experience, that this is what I also was experiencing as well as being a player.
This is a really interesting lens when you're doing it both personally and then doing reflection work on it. But there's a dark side to it too. Mm-hmm. Could you share one or two of the crazy stories that people did while playing this game?
Yes. So basically there's a couple stories that come to mind. One of the stories is one in which a person who was playing the game was driving and pretty much hit a girl, and that girl passed away, unfortunately. This is very a very dramatic example, but it's nonetheless a way that shows how pervasive such technology is. And then the other story is of parents who actually left their toddler in pursuit of trying to catch Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't imagine any single parent leaving their toddler at home alone. And this toddler had actually wandered out of the house to try to find the parents. That is amazing to me, because that really kind of speaks. Here we're not talking children, we're not talking teenagers, we're talking about adults displaying this type of behavior. And of course, there's other accidents and aspects that if you look it up, you will see a myriad of examples out there where people have run into objects playing this game. Or, you know, there's actually been statements by public institutions like firefighters and police departments saying, hey, please be careful while you're playing this game. We have had so many reports sent in to us. Please be careful. And they announced this on their official channels as well. So there is a dark side to this. And so while there's a positive, we have to be very mindful of how the negative impacts and consequences this game has.
I can imagine people being so engrossed in their screen, they are not aware of their circumstances. I mean, we've all heard stories about them walking into ditches or even off a cliff in one instance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's hard to imagine, but it is engrossing. It is all encompassing. Yeah. And you talked about another aspect of the game that you saw in yourself and then you began to see in others. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so what's interesting about this technology, and I'm specifically sticking to Pokemon Go, but really it can apply to other technology we experience, whether it's social media or virtual reality that's coming about. But just to kind of stay with Pokemon Go, I noticed that I almost developed an addiction to it. And it started to become a priority instead of something that I would go to for a break, you know? So here I was starting to spend more time on the game. I would tell Holly, I remember, I say, you know, I'm going to stop by the Arboretum and, you know, I'm just going to take a walk around there and perhaps play a little bit of Pokemon Go. And she's like, okay, well, like, when will you be back? And I would say shortly. And then all of a sudden 2 hours elapsed. Yeah. And then she's like, what happened? and she would actually be messaging me, hey, when are you coming home? Or well, what's the latest status? I would say, oh, just in a little bit, in a little bit. So, you know, I started to notice that that became a detriment to playing the game. It was something where it was, obviously, I was experiencing some of the benefits. I was walking outside. I was being healthy. But now it became an end to which I had sought fulfillment. I could get it through this game. It was no longer a means to an end. It became the end in itself.
Right.
Playing the game equals joy.
It's no longer about friendship. It's about the game.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Well, you identified several aspects of addictive elements. Now, whether or not this is verifiably an addiction, we're not going to get into that. Mm. But maybe you want to just read this list for us as we all think about how this might apply to other technologies.
Yeah, so Pokemon Go is designed with the intentionality to engage you at any moment in time. And what we're looking at when these developers design a game, they design it based on several compelling elements. So the very first thing is you have a goal, but that goal is not necessarily easy to get, but it's easy enough that if you put in enough effort, you can get it. So they make these goals compelling, and they make them just slightly beyond your reach, okay? So this is one aspect. You got a challenge in front of you, and you've got to meet the challenge. And it's not too hard to do, okay? Second, you get positive feedback. As soon as you achieve that goal, there is an animation that appears on your screen, and you are the hero, and you've got this Pokemon, and it's a rare Pokemon, and now it's part of your Pokedex, right? And it's a glittering screen of positive reinforcement that you see. The other aspect is that you make incremental progress and improvement. Now you become a more professional Pokemon trainer. Now you've developed your skill base, right? Now you have a lot more Pokemon. So now you're seeing yourself improve. You're seeing yourself grow, and you want to keep growing to the ultimate potential, okay? And that's a sliding rule, so to speak, okay? Next is the tasks that they have become difficult over time. So they present you with more and more difficult tasks over a period of time. So think about this. The more difficult a task is, the more consuming it becomes, because you have to apply your cognitive resources, your emotional resources, your energy, everything that you have to solve that problem. Now think about that. When you initially started to play the game, it was easy. But now we're getting more engagement as we go along. And they have to do that. Why? Because otherwise you won't keep playing the game. So then that starts to become a cost. So now as I'm achieving these harder tasks and I'm using more of my resources to do so, what am I giving up in order to put in that effort? We sometimes don't necessarily think about that as we're using these technologies. And then we find ourselves spending a lot of time or hours or researching or going to game user forums, right, to find the latest tips and strategies. So it becomes engrossing. Now you have to ask yourself, to what cost? At what cost am I doing this? You know, and to what benefit am I doing this? And where does it make sense? Is there a sense of balance, or am I completely engrossed that I start to become blind to other things? But this is the nature of the game itself. And then there's also these aspects where you have these unresolved tensions, okay? And so you may, for example, run out of Pokeballs. Oh, how am I going to get more Pokeballs? Well, I could go to a station nearby where I could refill. Well, to get to that station, I have to walk this many minutes, right? Or I'd have to go a mile or something like that, right? Or get into the car. So now you have this tension, but you need to resolve the tension in order to get the next Pokemon, or in order to level up or achieve your goal. And it becomes a game of achievement, because you're also comparing it not only with yourself, but also with others who play this game. So there's a sense of unresolved tension. And then finally, last but not least, and I kind of mentioned that last element, there's that strong social connection. Everyone can see where you are in the game, and they're very impressed sometimes by what you achieve. Now, these are good. These are aspects that actually in any discipline, if you're even a teacher or a student, right? Some of these elements are very positive in a sense, because they speak to the elements of engagement. But
the engagement quickly can lead to addiction.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So what responsibility do designers and producers have, and what responsibilities do we have as users?
Mm-hmm. So when we look at responsibility itself, I think from the aspect of the designer should disclose ways to appropriately play the game. And that should be first and foremost, because I think for any business, I would say you're only as good as your user. So if you disclose, for example, one, we want to respect other people's privacy because you're out in a public space. So as you're capturing these Pokemon or taking pictures or screenshots, you want to respect other people's privacy. Second, you also want to respect people's private property itself. So you don't want to encroach on somebody's backyard or something like that just to kind of catch Pokemon. Now, they do have, and Niantic and Pokemon do have a list of protocols and guidelines that they keep updating, and including like the most recent updates, they really speak to that in greater detail. They also, for example, mention like never to operate it in your car. Now, when I was first doing this research, you could ignore that warning. So if you launch the app and you're in your car and they say, you know, do not operate this while you're driving, you can say ignore. You can just say, I'm walking. You can actually override that, right? But I think it's very important for them to communicate that very specifically, not just keep it on a page, but make it perhaps part of their communication campaign to their users and promote the responsible use of the app. So I think that can go a long way in helping people like follow the guidelines that are conducive to proper gameplay. And that's the very, very important aspect. The other aspect too is to actually admit there is perhaps a level of addiction that can be promoted by this game. And why not mention that it could actually affect you to that point? And if you do see yourself being addicted to the game, here are some resources that can help you. Here are some app settings and parameters that can help you, right? These are things that you can actually communicate right to your user. I think this would make it even more of a trustworthy app and more of an app that I would use if I know those protocols and guidelines are in place and that the developer has thought through the various issues that can impact the user in the use and play of the game itself.
It's a tough pressure, though, when they are designing for engagement that is addictive, because the more they use, you know, the more someone uses it, the more they benefit.
Yes.
So responsibility in design is huge.
Yes. Absolutely. I think if we look at short term, you know, what are your ultimate goal? If it's the short term, you want to keep your users as engaged as possible. But if it's the long term, you want more meaningful engagement with your app. And I think the way that you do that is by communicating those safeguards, putting those safeguards in place, and making sure that you're looking at the benefit of the user as well as the benefit of the company who's developing it. Because yes, they have resources that are required to develop the game. They also have to make a profit to make things go and to reinvest that profit back into the company. And that's very important, but profit with responsibility is the best way to go. And the long-term perspective leads to that ultimate outcome. And I believe that by instating these safeguards, if they can, they can achieve that goal to one, serving their customers and serving their stakeholders.
And that's good stewardship of resources. Mm-hmm. Stewardship on their part, and then we need to be good stewards of our time and our experiences.
Yes.
Rafiq, thank you for sharing your experience with Pokemon Go and your reflections on best practices. Your reminder to, quote, invest time, attention, empathy, respect, faith, guidance, and steadfast love in relationships continues to be a timely challenge in our technologically dependent world. Thank you for being with us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate doing this work, and very much appreciative of the Wendt Center.
Well, our guest today has been Rafiq Sinnou, Associate Professor of Business, and I'm Annalee Ward for Character Explorations from the Wentz Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque.